Hello.
All right, there we go.
Okay, I can hear you now. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Well, welcome. So, Barbara, this is the last, well, next to the last day of the year, 2019, and it actually is the last full work day of the year. Some people are already gone, of course. Some people never showed up. Well, either way, we're here. So, let me see what I've got here. The topic of the day is whatever you think we should talk about. What do you want to talk about?
Well, I'd like to talk about how are we going to solve homelessness in 2020, because you had sent me an article.
Abracadabra. There you go. I just solved it.
You had just sent me an interesting article this week about someone's idea of building a $3 billion segregated city that looked a bit like a...
Well, wait a minute. Now, I didn't say any of those things about what it looked like.
You know what it looked like to me.
I want the public to be clear that whether I agree or disagree is not the point. I didn't say it looked like a gulag. What it looked like was a bad idea.
Yeah, I don't see where segregating 150,000 homeless people from the rest of us put them out of sight, out of mind. I don't see
nobody
how that's
said
solid.
That. Where are you going to put 150,000? He just had an idea amongst
he
many other ideas.
He had an idea of going out into some deserted area where there are no
cities.
I don't know. I didn't read the whole article. I don't know.
And build you a where are you gonna? No, you have to buy this land. The problem with the idea, he's gonna crowdfund it. What are we giving this bad crowdfunding for? And he has no chance of doing any of that. The only way that's gonna work has got to be done by military, to tell you the truth. People cannot do this. This is emergency circumstances. Get them off the street. The rain is coming. Or whatever's coming. Big rat is coming. Anybody is coming.
It was 16 high-rise buildings or something. I mean, it was a city of 150,000 people. That can't be built overnight. I mean, that's going to take a while to build.
Yeah, but his assertion was that, well, to do what the, I was going to say the American way, the way the government is planning on solving it is going to take 200 years. You know, the country, we celebrated the bicentennial. A lot happened. So if it's going to take 200 years, I guess any idea is worth looking at for focus. But in this particular case, that idea is not going to work. Anybody sending crowdfund money is, I don't know. I think they're just giving a gift to keep the issue in the forefront of people's mind, because that will never get built like that, unless the government does it. And I mean, not military, even federal government. The federal government owns a lot of land.
Yes, I understand. The government could donate the land, but still, it has to be...
Not to donate nothing. The government could keep owning land, and the people can go live there, or something's going to happen for... I don't know what to say.
It doesn't seem
happen.
Like you're trying to reintegrate these people back into society to live productive lives by segregating them in a prison-like environment.
It's not prison. I don't advocate what the guy's going to build, but I mean, what do you expect?
I'm giving you my opinion of what it looked like.
Okay. Well, how was Gilligan, and only Mr. Howe had some money on Gilligan's Island. He showed who had to take it with him. He had it on him like somebody cared.
I don't think Gilligan's Island is going to work for the homeless. That's
I don't think Gilligan's Island, but look at, they were living in huts. So what are you talking about? Gulag. What, no gulag?
The picture that I saw looked very sterile, and they talked about people sleeping in barracks. The people wouldn't even have their own rooms.
Give them a comfy bed and give them a comfort bear or whatever they call it, teddy bear. Can you still call them teddy bears? You got to call them L bear, Elsa. What do you call it?
Why can't you call it teddy bear?
I don't know.
It was named after Theodore Roosevelt.
What?
That's what it was named after, the teddy bear, after Theodore Roosevelt. There's there's nothing politically incorrect about calling a teddy bear a teddy bear.
Well, I'm sure they love Theodore Roosevelt.
As a matter of fact, I saw this morning, I saw someone with a teddy bear t-shirt on. It looked quite attractive.
Huh. Okay, well, in the dreamland of the Harvest Festival.
What are you talking about?
Calvin of Witches Grove. If you believe anybody can solve this problem, excuse me.
Are you getting other than a little the government. Cold?
No, I got something in my throat. Smoke.
What they need to do is provide job training, counseling.
Taxpayer is that? So are you saying?
All right. I'm going to give you a personal. May I please speak for a moment?
Sure.
I can't afford to talk to you. I have a personal antidote to share. Okay.
Oh, don't make us tell us at the grim times of history. Okay. What is
So my husband actually worked for a not-for-profit organization in New York City for a couple of years, which was something he had never done before. He had always worked in.
Did they pay him?
Yeah, of course they paid him. This was for him a brand new experience, and it was one of his favorite jobs, actually, because he had always worked in publishing, but this was something that came to him through a friend, and he got involved, and he really enjoyed doing it for the time that he did. Back to subject matter. The not-for-profit organization, it advocated for the homeless, for people with AIDS, for women who are victims of domestic violence. So those were the groups that they advocated for. And what they provided...
Wait a minute. Was this a real foundation or just some guys advocating?
No, this was real. This was a real...
Does it exist still?
No, the man died.
The man that started it
passed away. And the board of directors that was running it, but it's since gone out of existence. This was, I'm talking about something that was going on maybe 15 years ago. But what they were trying to do is they were trying to give people temporary shelter where they could kind of earn their way into better living arrangements. So they started
out... Wait a minute. Earn their way?
Yes.
Do they start owing anything? No.
It wasn't a monetary earning. It was earning by accomplishment. So they were taking courses, they were taking retraining courses, they were trying to prepare themselves to get some kind of jobs. They were being counseled. They had lawyers and ombudsmen and social workers, and they had a whole support team for these people to try to reintegrate them into society by giving them the tools that they would need to at some point become independent again. But as part of this supportive process, they started out in shelter type situations, and then they move them to scatter.
Barracks, like the guy said he gonna build. So what's the problem?
What?
You were saying that the thing looked like a gulag that the guy just tried to crowdfund the homeless solution.
Yeah,
and what you described, that's exactly what these guys were doing.
No, they weren't doing that. It was all of these sites, all of these places that they were housing people were within the boroughs of New York City. They were within community.
Okay, they're within the boroughs. Okay, where did they get these?
Are you going to let me finish?
I want to understand.
But I would like to just finish my point. Thank you.
Okay, well, is there long to your point? Because there are questions, and for you to just continue without me asking, did the nonprofit pay rent to the owners of the apartment building for these homeless people to stay in them? How did they get these?
October 7th, 2019, 8 o'clock a.m. Is rent control the answer, or is there some other way? Written by Michael Polk of Polk Properties. There it is again. Another discussion about rent control in the news. Just what is it, and what are the varied interests competing or defending in this arena? A textbook definition would go something like this. Rent control is a system of regulations administered by a public authority that limits any rise in rental rates outside of a public or government prescribed amount. Another way my colleagues in the real estate industry might describe rent control is a taking and redistribution scheme to relieve one social ill at the expense of another group. Well, you may say, isn't this eminent domain? That may or may not be so in the most exact sense, but the property owner will possess less after rent control's implementation, less money, a dimmer future, and a decreased desire to operate their property. The objective of controlling the prices of rent is usually to counteract the inequality of bargaining power between landlords and tenants, as part of a minimum set of rights to make the market fair. It may function as a price ceiling. Rent control laws vary from one jurisdiction to another within some countries. With the housing crisis, here's the lowdown. The situation is dire. A lot of factors are at work, ranging from density to construction to gentrification and more. There are worldwide calls for rent control. The people are speaking and the given representatives are listening. Just look at the situation in New York City. Everybody has a side. Renters, the homeless population, property owners, and politicians. Who gains and who loses in this situation? On the one hand, there is an epic need for affordable housing. On the other hand, property owners should be allowed to benefit from their capital and labor. If the government powers that be want rent control implemented where it doesn't currently exist, I say they should use eminent domain and buy the property, operate it, and deal with the associated issues. I submit any rent-controlled apartment owner should be allowed to enact reverse eminent domain. I just made that up. They should be able to queue up to the government and wash their hands of the property and associated issues. No takers. Renters require adequate housing that they can afford. Rent control can give them a sense of, well, control. They don't have to worry about their rent increasing annually without a cap. The downside of rent control for the renter is that the property owner has no incentive to improve their property for a paltry return. Rent control can allow for an us versus them situation in landlord-tenant relationships. Renters want to maintain their control, and landlords want to maximize the return on their investment. The politicians want votes. The homeless population is seeking relief. Oh, and I should mention the neighbors who live in areas of rent control. They may be fixed in place through home ownership or other reasons. If landlords have no incentive to repair or improve their property, what happens? You can probably imagine. Also not considered from the landlord's position is the equity trapped in their property by rent-controlled income. There are properties in major cities that have a rent control or stabilization scheme in place, so the true value of the landlord's capital and efforts will never be realized. I know, the landlord is usually the bad guy in the story, but not really. What exactly did the landlord do to the tenant who came to lease his unit? His rent is what he wants to charge, right? If not, isn't this a taking by the government of the landlord's present and future earnings? Most people purchase property for personal prosperity and future gain. Maybe they wish to leave an inheritance for their family. When they purchased the property, it wasn't subject to rent control, and then, bam, the value just dropped. Isn't that a taking? It may be for a well-intentioned reason, yet it is still a taking. The real question is, should those who do not own the property, for example, tenants and the government, be able to make decisions for those who do? Of course, normal zoning and land use issues aside, I mean to make decisions as to how much risk he is willing to bear. If I charge too much for a rental unit, then no one takes my product. The market can sort this out if our system is sound, right? Did landlords cause income inequality? Should they be forced to solve it? Politicians have little incentive to go against the voters' will, and more voters will be tenants than landlords. So what can the landlords do? They can lobby, but who will they lobby? Politicians. So how could the competing desires be fairly ranked? All landlords are not evil. All rent control tenants are not freeloaders. In my opinion, there's a simple solution. If the government wants rent control in their city or state, they should build it themselves or contribute to the land to do so. This way, the burden would shift more equitably. The governmental agencies can also earn money off the investment of contributed land. Any plan involving affordable housing must address the homeless, of course. If government entities would contribute the land and entitling the same, density shifts to accommodate homeless populations in a distributed way can be achieved. And politicians, they get to do something about creating jobs for, first and foremost, a newly stabilized homeless population. The shame we all should feel when we see or hear about the homeless condition can begin to be mitigated by contributing government-owned land where available. We have what we need. Builders could build anywhere, and it would be a win-win.
Boroughs, in the boroughs, integrated into the city.
Did they pay real money? Did they get these buildings?
Yes, did they pay real money?
They paid real money, but I believe that some of these buildings may have belonged to the city. And so what they did was they renovated the buildings to make them accessible for this particular purpose. And so I believe—
Who renovated the building?
The non-for-profit organization did, through donations.
Oh, yeah? They had some money?
Yes, they did, through donations.
So they renovate the building, but they don't own the building.
I know you're going to let me explain where they got the money.
Okay, I'd like to know that. Yeah, you can explain that part. Go ahead.
They had grants. They got government grants. And they did private government of the United States. And they did fundraising. My husband's job was director of development. So he was in charge of fundraising. Okay, so that's what he did for them.
Was he the guy refurbishing the buildings, the development, or he was just developing some new funds?
A director of development means that you're a fundraiser. That's what that title means.
They have director of business development. That's not fundraising. I guess in a sense, it's all fundraising.
This was his title. This is what he was responsible for. He was responsible to go out to private corporations and through other means to raise funds. They put on different events.
What's the other mean?
They put on some events in which they raise money.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
What was the last event you remember that was good?
Oh, it was a musical jazz concert.
Mm-hmm.
And it raised money for the organization. He worked with AT&T, and they donated cell phones for all these people. He worked with a couple of museums in New York and a couple of schools, like School of Visual Arts, and they provided artwork.
Crayons.
No, they provided artwork and decoration.
This was in a venue then. I don't know. I'm trying to figure it out.
No, I'm telling you, they had different types of housing.
Not the housing. I'm thinking about the event. Remember, I asked about the event.
I was trying to explain to you that there were different ways that they raised money. One was through events, through talking to corporate sponsors and getting them to donate goods, services, money, whatever. And he did deal with a number of museums and schools. And what they donated was artwork or students or people to paint murals, to whatever they could do to decorate these places in an uplifting way where the people were going to be staying.
That sounds great. Everything, we need everything. I can't shun any idea. I wish the guy was still open. I wish the guy was closed and not needed. But here's to the guy, whoever his name is. We should look the name up and put it in the notes who this guy and Barbara's story is at the point of 13 minutes and 37 seconds.
Well, we can do this again when we're more organized and we're less.
I don't want it organized. This is how we just do shit.
We're just talking. Inclined to interrupt. But
Not interrupt. This is podcast world. We could interrupt it. We could do this all day. We could have the world's longest show. I wonder what the world's longest podcast is. Somebody's done it already.
Continually interrupts and never lets the other person speak. That would be
tell the world. Lament, but back to the point. What were you? Okay, so what about the homeless?
What happened was that they had a pretty good percentage of success with these different groups of people and reintegrating them back into productive lives.
What is productive life? What's the bottom line of productive life?
Where they had permanent housing that they could pay for, where they had employment.
That could be jail. You can have employment in jail. You can have permanent housing.
All right.
And you can't even have health care.
Well, then let's go back to the other guy's original plan and just throw them all in jail.
That's not jail, Barbara. It had auditorium seating in it. You ever seen a jail with auditorium seating? Nobody's
going
to let them build it in.
I've seen a school with auditorium seating.
A school. But you know me, how I feel about school.
Yeah, well,
I'm a fan of learning, though, and executing with the knowledge.
You're totally against school since you have two sons that are well-educated. So
we aren't well-educated. They're educated by me.
No,
that's the best part they can get.
The schools that they got that first and foremost, so that was important.
They're getting it right now.
But then you made sure they also got formal education. That's also important.
Well, can't take no chances with the little people. You know what I mean?
Anyway, there are solutions, but they're not easy and there isn't a one solution fits all, because with this particular program they were dealing with three different groups of people that had totally different problems.
You're gonna get that when you got the homeless. Everybody got a different problem.
So
they got one unified problem: get out off the traffic. This is atrocious. We are not gonna let this be.
Some of the people had AIDS.
I don't need to know all that extra stuff. Everybody got, it's everything you can think vile is on the homeless block. And you can go one block and find it all. So we don't need the people saying that. We've got to do something.
There are all different kinds of reasons why people end up being homeless. You know that.
Okay. Well, we don't have time to figure that out. We got to get them off the street.
I thought that's what we were going to be talking about this morning.
But you seem to be running down the list of problems. We don't have time to figure out the problem. If you're outside on the sidewalk with a basket, you're going around the corner to the National Emergency Homeless Thing.
I'm just going to be quiet and let you do the podcast.
No, we can do whatever. I mean, you got this point and you given a law platform soon to be. Bring out the Chanel dress skirt, send her to the filibuster section, about the useless not gonna work idea of the long list of history. No. What we need to do is get these people off the street, Barbara, right now. That's it. No more. I give a fuck. That's just garbage you got. I don't care what the Civil Liberty Union said. Well, okay, I tell you what. Bring your garbage and we're going to give you some money for it to go into your account to pay for your lodging while you off the street. Okay? No more of this. If you got medicine, some family pictures, we're going to digitize everything. You have a representation. We've got printers if you want to have a junk bag. But no. No more. What would China do if everybody's so in love with China? What would China do? China don't have homes. They become workers.
They would just shoot them.
We can't have that.
Well,
you know that.
What China would do. I don't know. Have you ever read about China's homeless population and what they do about those people?
Yes, they put them under they have ghost cities. Shining examples of what they could do with a commodity play and get all the steel and the cement.
They have ghost cities because they built expensive cities and then they didn't have people that could afford to live there. That's why.
Right. So they don't do nothing with the homeless. The homeless live under the city.
I don't know what they do with the homeless. I've not researched it.
I don't know what they do with the homeless. That's why I asked you. I don't all know anything. I know a couple of things, though. I know that our audience has indulged us quite a bit. We should probably give them a break and let them hear a word from our sponsor. A word from our sponsor. Yes, right. Our sponsor, Anchor. They're a wonderful cabal of guys. I love them all. With a lot of good thought over there. You guys should make your own podcast. Here's to us, and here's to that, and here's to everybody. Happy New Year. Rent Control is coming. You guys know that. Now, I suggest you all go get your LA Times, because it's going to be probably 500 pages. Of, you know, we have Rent Control now. So here's all you guys out there with your properties that should have sold them. I may come back around and with a new price like Scrooge and a wagon. This is for you. You'll know who you are when you hear this. Oh, let me jiggle my bag of change. I got some fix like ODM. I'm coming for you. All right, Barbara.
August 14th, 2019, 8:15 a.m. How a public-private partnership can mitigate three factors encroaching on cities today. Written by Michael Polk of Polk Properties. In urban cores and cities across the U.S., planning departments have been attempting to address the housing crisis. Increased density is one tool they have been using. Some of this planning is conducted on a regional basis through collective action by cities and counties, and where there are transportation and infrastructure projects are usually the hubs for new housing starts. This is on top of developers attempting to take advantage of the very same density gains in order to profit. After all, there are only so many sweet spots to build on. On the one hand, cities need affordable housing. On the other, developers naturally want to build for profit. So, what do we do to meet both sets of goals? I live in Los Angeles, and I believe I have seen everything that can impact a dwelling, from fires to earthquakes to riots. What I am now witnessing in Los Angeles is shocking, or it should be, to any real estate veteran. You cannot move around. I know everyone in real estate loves to see the cranes that signal progress, but is there a breaking point? As I see it, there are three key issues converging all at once that are making a mess of urban cores. Construction. First, think about the traffic construction sites bring. If you have had the good fortune to see the workers in the street with directional flags, you get the idea. There they are, waving the caution flag or the stop sign. Traffic now stops cold, and people start looking for an escape route. Where there is density, there is a need to move building materials to the upper floors. This happens from ground level, thus the person with the flag. In Los Angeles, the slightest hiccup in traffic reverberates throughout the arterial traffic corridors. To make this less of an imposition on the public, the construction schedule should be considered to ease the process for everybody. Cities may be able to help by providing existing up-to-date traffic data so development movements can be scheduled with the public and projects in mind. If you want smart cities, I say start here. Ride-sharing. Then, there is the fact that people find ride-sharing services so convenient. Why drive ourselves? We can infer from the success of ride-hailing companies that the model is here to stay. The ride-sharing companies will say they are helping to alleviate congestion, but recent research doesn't agree. Convenience has a price. In this case, the price is increased traffic. The concept of traffic may be nothing new in Los Angeles, but what I'm seeing lately is different. When people earn their living by driving around all day, we see an endless circulation of cars that never park. Gentrification. Gentrification also plays a part in the traffic equation. People are tired of long commutes from the suburbs and are rediscovering the origin points of great cities. The old and new join together for a reimagined future. Real estate developers should consider investigating what surplus land cities may be able to allocate to the goal of ending some of their housing crunches. Developers might also have to try to partner with existing owners who have enormous equity positions in their properties but lack the expertise to extract the gains that lay present. This could also mute a great deal of constituent angst about displacement. A total solution. I don't believe that the planning functions took the effects of ride-hailing companies, gentrification, and enormous construction projects all happening at once into consideration. If they did, how could this have happened? I believe we need to have a true public-private partnership, wherein the government entities contribute non-performing government-owned land into a pool. From here, developers can choose locations and apply to build on that public land. this land should be allocated in a reasonably dispersed way so as to still take advantage of rail and other associated public transportation. The sweet spot must be expanded to relieve and distribute the traffic burden equitably. The public return on unused land is 0%. No taxes, no income, zilch. So there is no reason not to maximize it. The land is a major part of developers' cost. This cost is borne up front, with the soft cost following. If the land cost is reduced to a number that facilitates a reasonable return for the developer and true streamlining of entitlements and permitting occur, we will all win. Developers can look to build where they may not have in the past. This could also foster improved neighborhood retail and other uses. Furthermore, as a true partnership, the process should move along much faster. Homelessness, affordability, and other housing issues can be addressed by this simple input. If the load on the city centers can be distributed to other areas of the cities by placing the usable government surplus land in service, this would foster development in a balanced way. Builders love to build. Local governments should utilize people's land for obvious needs. Contribute that land, and the builders will come.